No underground facilities for chemical or biological production or storage were found so far.
There might be not a bad idea for Saddam Hussein to really, in the face of immense pressure and to save his country and to save his regime, in fact, to step down.
In Iraq, how much are the tankers going to cost? We have troop transports, LAJs, LSTs, LHHs. We have military salaries.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Friday, March 7th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The United States clashed bitterly with France, Germany, China, and Russia at the UN Security Council today as all four nations stood firm against U.S. plans to launch a war against Iraq soon. A mixed report from UN Weapons Chief Inspector Hans Blix left the major powers more divided than ever on the looming war which President Bush has threatened to launch with or without United Nations approval. Blix's latest report gave some backings to both sides. He told a tense security Council that Iraq's move to begin destroying its Al-Samud II missiles constituted a, quote, substantial measure of disarmament, but criticized the rate at which the Iraqis had handed over documents on prohibited chemical and biological systems, and he called for greater access to scientists in private.
As I noted on the 14th of February, intelligence authorities have claimed that weapons of mass destruction are moved around Iraq by trucks. In particular, that there are mobile production units for biological weapons. The Iraqi side states that such activities do not exist. Several inspections have taken place at declared and undeclared sites in relation to mobile production facilities. No evidence of proscribed activities have so far been found. Iraq is expected to assist in the development of credible ways to conduct random checks of ground transportation. Inspectors are also engaged in examining Iraq's programs for remotely piloted vehicles. A number of sites have been inspected with data being collected to assess the range and other capabilities of the various models found, and inspections are continuing in this area. There have been reports denied from the Iraqi side that proscribed activities are conducted underground. Iraq should provide information on any underground structure suitable for the production or storage of weapons of mass destruction. During inspections of declared or undeclared facilities, inspection teams have examined building structures for any possible underground facilities. In addition, ground-penetrating radar equipment was used in several specific locations. No underground facilities for chemical or biological production or storage were found so far. I should add that both for the monitoring of ground transportation and for the inspection of underground facilities, we would need to increase our staff in Iraq. I'm not talking about a doubling of the staff. I would rather have twice the amount of high-quality information about sites to inspect than twice the number of expert inspectors to send. On 14 February, I reported to the Council that the Iraqi side had become more active in taking and proposing steps which potentially might shed new light on unresolved disarmament issues. Even a week ago, when the current quarterly report was finalized, there was still relatively little tangible progress to note. Hence, the cautious formulations in the report before you. As of today, there is more. While during our meetings in Baghdad, the Iraqi side tried to persuade us that the Al-Samud II missiles they have declared fall within the permissible range set by the Security Council, the calculations of an international panel of experts led us to the opposite conclusion. Iraq has since accepted that these missiles and associated items be destroyed and has started the process of destruction under our supervision.
Hans Blix, Chief Weapons Inspector for the UN Security Council. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Mohammed Al-Baradei, characterized the present activities of the IAEA as one of investigation. He said Iraq has not started to rebuild its nuclear weapons program, that the defunct industrial capacity has deteriorated significantly. Turning his attention to the much-touted aluminum tubes, Al-Baradei had these comments.
With regard to the aluminum tubes, the IAEA has conducted a thorough investigation of Iraq's attempt to purchase large quantities of high-strength aluminum tubes. As previously reported, Iraq has maintained that these aluminum tubes were sought for rocket production. Extensive field investigation and document analysis have failed to uncover any evidence that Iraq intended to use these 81-millimeter tubes for any project other than the reverse engineering of rockets. The Iraqi decision-making process with regard to the design of these rockets was well documented. Iraq has provided copies of design documents, procurement records, minutes of committee meetings, and supporting data and samples. A thorough analysis of this information, together with information gathered from interviews with Iraqi personnel, has allowed the IAEA to develop a coherent picture of attempted purchase and intended usage of the 81-millimeter aluminum tubes, as well as the rationale behind the changes in the tolerance. Drawing on this information, the IAEA has learned that the original tolerance for the 81-millimeter tubes were set prior to 1987 and were based on physical measurements taken from a small number of imported rockets in Iraq's possession. Initial attempts to reverse engineer the rockets met with little success. With regard to uranium acquisition, the IAEA has made progress in its investigation into reports that Iraq sought to buy uranium from Niger in recent years. The investigation was centered on documents provided by a number of states that pointed to an agreement between Niger and Iraq for the sale of uranium between 1999 and 2001. The IAEA has discussed these reports with the government of Iraq and Niger, both of which have denied that any such activity took place. For its part, Iraq has provided the IAEA with a comprehensive explanation of its relations with Niger and has described a visit by an Iraqi official to a number of African countries, including Niger, in February 1999, which Iraq thought might have given rise to the reports. The IAEA was able to review correspondence coming from various bodies of the government of Niger and to compare the form, format, contents and signature of that correspondence with those of the alleged procurement-related documentations. Based on thorough analysis, the IAEA has concluded with the concurrence of outside experts that these documents, which form the basis for the reports of recent uranium transaction between Iraq and Niger, are in fact not authentic. We have therefore concluded that these specific allegations are unfounded.
Mohammed Al-Baradei of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Iraq's ambassador, Mohammed Al-Dori, was critical of the U.S. and Britain position that stood in contrast to the other members of the Security Council. He began by congratulating the people of the U.S. and Britain.
I should like to express my appreciation for the efforts being made by all churches in stressing the importance of peace, as well as the efforts in particular made by His Holiness the Pope in underscoring peace and denouncing war, considering such war void from any moral or legitimate foundation. On behalf of the people of Iraq, I should like to salute all the peoples in the world, and in particular the people of the United States of America and the British people, the people of Spain, who took to the streets in their millions in demonstrations expressing their attachment to peace and their rejection of war. Mr. President, the U.S. administration with Britain have in the past and continue to attempt to trump up facts and evidence pointing to Iraq's possession of weapons of mass destruction. However, they have come short in convincing the international community. The inspectors have proved that there are no such weapons and that such allegations are false. Secretary Powell spoke of a lack of a strategic and political decision in Iraq, confirming a commitment to the resolutions of international legitimacy and a commitment to ridding Iraq of weapons of mass destruction. Let me affirm that Iraq's strategic decision to rid itself of weapons of mass destruction was indeed taken in 1991. ANSCOM worked for 8 years. Iraq handed over many of those weapons to ANSCOM for destruction in the period from 1991 to 1994. Indeed, ANSCOM did undertake the destruction of those weapons. That, in addition to the weapons unilaterally destroyed by Iraq in the summer of 1991. These include all prescribed material in the biological area. This, Mr. President, is the central fact of the matter. Since then, nothing has been unearthed to contradict that central fact.
Iraqi Ambassador to the UN Mohammed al-Dari speaking through a translator. Well, it was only the second time the president has held a news conference in prime time, and last night Bush used the occasion to attempt to persuade the American public an invasion into Iraq is a security mandate.
Inspection teams do not need more time or more personnel. All they need is what they have never received, the full cooperation of the Iraqi regime. Token gestures are not acceptable. The only acceptable outcome is the one already defined by a unanimous vote of the Security Council: total disarmament.
The news conference was timed on the eve of the critical weapons inspector's report to the UN, and a soft-spoken Bush attempted to appear reasonable rather than rash. But congressional Democrats, many of whom voted to give Bush authority to use force against Iraq, came out swinging last night. Minority leaders from the House and Senate, Nancy Pelosi and Tom Daschle, said invading Iraq would be premature. Daschle said there is virtual unanimity among Democrats that Bush has failed in his diplomatic dealings. U.S. Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones is a member of the House Ways and Means Committee. Peace Watch asked her if Bush was convincing in his attempts to make the case for war.
I heard the press conference and I saw it. I was not reassured. And I've been asking the same questions over and over of the administration. What is this war going to cost us? And I can't seem to get a response. And I know that same question was asked of the president last night, and his response was, well, 3,000 people got killed in New York. There's no cost to that. And I understand that. I'm not trying to put a cost on that, but I am confident that this administration has reviewed what they estimate the cost of expending or sending all those troops over into the Middle East, the tankers, the ammunition, all of that. They've costed that out to the extent that they can. They've made a prediction as to how long, if we end up in war, we would expect to be in Iraq. They've estimated if we're going to be in Iraq over an extended period of time, what that's going to cost. And I believe that the American public is entitled to know that. And this administration has refused to do that.
We know that over the last several months, we've heard a variety of estimates of how much this war is really going to cost the American people in terms of both tax dollars, not to mention the cost of human lives that will be lost. And the estimates range into the billions. You are a member of the House Ways and Means Committee, and we have a clip where you held Treasury Secretary John Snow accountable for some sort of figure. We'd like to play that now.
My question is, what is the cost of war as compared to the GDP in numbers as you use it, sir?
I don't know.
You don't know, do you?
No, I don't know. I don't know that we're having a war. I mean, the whole objective here is to avoid a war.
Well, if it's not a war, then tell me, what is it costing us to have Black Hawk helicopters all over in Iraq? How much are the tankers going to cost? We have troop transports, LAJs, LSTs, LHHs. We have military salaries, food, clothing, ammunition. Every day in my congressional district, somebody is being deployed. What's that costing, sir? If it's not called war, what is it cost? What is it? And how much does it cost? And where does it
fit in the budget, sir?
Well, as we discussed earlier, whatever the cost is, and I don't know.
You're the Secretary of the Treasury, and you don't know what's sending, not the war, but the Black Hawk helicopters, the tankers, the ships, the military salaries, the food, the clothing, the ammunition, the base maintenance, the carrier ships. You don't know what that costs?
No, I don't, but I'm sure somebody in the government does who's
Could you get that answer for me tomorrow?
I don't know that I know how to get that answer, but Mitch
You're the
Daniels
Secretary of the Treasury, and you can't get that answer, and you don't know where it is?
Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones, have you gotten your response yet?
No, I have not, and I don't anticipate getting a response. The reason the administration sends someone like John Snow, who started about 3 weeks ago, to our committee to answer questions is he doesn't know, and they don't want us to know. And so, therefore, he sits there, and I think it's a shame, and I need good answers. And if you don't put the questions out there, the American public doesn't understand what's happening.
And did President Bush, in his responses last night, provide any answers to that question that
Absolutely
were satisfactory?
Not. And he's not going to provide. But as important as that is, this president, and let me say that I come from a background of being the elected district attorney for Cuyahoga County for 8 years, and before that I was a judge for 10 years. So I know how to review facts and evidence and reach a conclusion. And this administration, in my opinion, has failed to make the connect between 9-1-1 and Saddam Hussein. Clearly there are terrorists out there, and clearly Saddam Hussein is not someone I want to live in my neighborhood. However, we've committed that we're going to exert a preemptive strike, put our country in harm's way, put our troops in harm's way in the Middle East, and haven't made the connection.
I didn't hear much of anything new in the president's address last night. He did repeatedly state the evils of Saddam Hussein and reissuing his warning that Saddam Hussein's time is really running out, that he needs to, quote, come clean. But he did seem to be saying all of this differently, using a more measured, deliberate, seemingly thoughtful tone. Did you get that impression at all?
Absolutely. And what is happening is, this, you note that the president hasn't done a press conference in 4 months. This press conference was timed, and it was timed on the eve of the vote in the United Nations. And it was timed because this is their last ploy or opportunity to say to the countries across the world, hey, here's where we are. Are you going to be with us? And see, now they want to count. They want it to be spread all over the screen. Who's ready to go to war with the United States and who's not ready to go to war, and what the impact of that's going to be. I support the president. I am a patriot, but I really believe he has not been a great diplomat. Have you ever seen the traditional United States allies at bay with us like they are right now? He could have used different tactics, not only in dealing with Saddam Hussein, but in dealing with France, in dealing with Germany, in dealing with Spain and all these other countries. And I think that is where he has left the American public.
Well, I believe Spain has now decided to join with the U.S. and British coalition. Mm-hmm. Congresswoman, did you vote initially for the president to have this authority to wage war?
And I have not changed my position. And since that vote, and then the other thing you need to look at as well is the administration knew about North Korea at the time we voted on war with Iraq and did not provide us that information. We got that information after our vote on Iraq. My guess is that had the Congress had that information before that vote on Iraq, the outcome may well have been different.
Mm-hmm. Are there any legislative strategies afoot or any legal strategies underway to try and prevent the president from going forward with what millions of Americans believe is an inappropriate war at this time?
Well, what I'm working on is continuing to talk to the American public, to keep talking, to keep protesting, to keep contacting their congressional people. I sincerely believe that the body politic, if they continue to raise their voices and protest, could turn this all around.
Finally, President Bush has made it very clear, and there's a headline stretched across this morning's Washington Post, Bush is ready to go to war without the U.N. Bush is ready to go without the U.N. And I think that polls indicate the majority of the American people do not want this country going to war without the backing of the U.N. Is there anything that Congress can do at this point to prevent that from happening?
It is my opinion that the only thing that we as members of Congress can do is continue to raise our voices and say, because we gave him the authority. And the dilemma is those of us in the minority don't have the ability to get additional legislation to the floor of the House because the Republicans are in the majority, and therefore they control the Rules Committee and how a piece of legislation, whether it even comes to the floor. So they're not going to let another piece of legislation with regard to this issue come to the floor.
Tomorrow is International Women's Day. This is International Women's Week. Right. I just want to take this opportunity to congratulate you on your work. You are the first African-American woman to be a member of the House Ways and Means Committee, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, and I am blessed and privileged to have the opportunity. I know that I'm not the first African-American woman qualified to serve, but I'm the first one that has been blessed with the opportunity, and I am going to do all that I can to make the people of America very proud of the work that I do. They may not like or agree with all my positions, but I will let them know they will respect the work that I do as a member of this committee.
U.S. Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones of Ohio, again, a member of the U.S. House Ways and Means Committee.
For roots in the shadows. There's no dying of hunger stare in eyes of Chief Executive Officer of Petroleum. Somebody else is sinking into spring freeze of the soil. Somebody else is evaporating in dry winds of the famine. There's no severe drought in mouth of Senior Vice President of Funding Services. Military contractor is sitting in heat of a disappearing lake. No river is drying up in kidneys of a minister of defense. Under Secretary of Interior is not writing distress signals on toilet walls. Do you see a refugee camp cooped up in head of Vice President of Municipal
Jane Cortez. According to undisclosed sources, Russian Prime Minister Yevgeny Primakov recently held secret meetings with Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. Viktor Gubarev, an associate with Stratfor Global Intelligence Service, says plans are being made to try to head off the war in Iraq.
We did make a lot of inquiries with our sources in Russia, including Russian government, and some of them knowledgeable sources have been kind enough to share some really interesting and, I would say, unique insights about this trip of Yevgeny Primakov to Iraq. We believe that the main purpose of the visit by Primakov to Baghdad was to strike a deal with Saddam Hussein, the leader of Iraq, and then reach out to the U.S. administration and for Russia to act as an intermediary here, as well as the third-party negotiator, in the end to reach the deal when there will be no war on Iraq.
And so the deal was that a deal would be struck with Saddam Hussein in order for Russia to be the intermediary with the U.S. What kind of deal was struck?
Let me first tell you that Yevgeny Primakov has been and will remain one of the most influential figures in Russia. In his authority, he exerts over Russian current political leaders, including President Putin. So, talking about the deal, the main point of the agreement Primakov has managed to get from Saddam Hussein is Saddam Hussein's promise to fully disarm, completely, fully, and unconditionally, with absolutely no conditions or delays attached. And Russia, when or after Primakov took and got this promise from Saddam Hussein, Russian President Putin later, by sending the head of his presidential administration, Voloshin, to Washington, where, by the way, he was received by President Bush, and this is the indicator of the great importance of this deal, continued Primakov deal, as they call it, Russia did offer to the United States that Russia would be a guarantor of this deal, so Russia would observe to the full end and see to the full end that Iraq is fully disarmed. So Russia basically delivered the way how to go out of this difficult situation.
And so apparently the U.S. rejected the deal.
Unfortunately, this is the case. But let me strike a little note of optimism here. I know that the negotiations, I would call it back channel or secret, if you will, negotiations between Russia and the United States on the top of the current formal negotiations are still continued. On the surface, it looks like Russia is talking mostly with France, Germany, and China, who are all opposing the war in Iraq. But Russia is also trying to strike a deal with the U.S. because for Russia, the war in Iraq, U.S. war on Iraq, will be probably a disaster, economic one, social one, political one. So now I would not say that the deal is completely rejected. Though when Voloshin came to Washington, according to our information, based on what we know from Washington, D.C., so-called on the Capitol Hill, yes, the Russian proposal was rejected. Still, in the very end, Mr. Bush said, well, okay, we would give some more thought as you so much ask about it. Now, what Russia tries to reach at this point is really to have the U.S. agreed that there is absolutely no need to attack Iraq, at least in the near future, because Saddam did agree on a full disarmament, and Russia promises that it would not be a play this time, but it would be a real disarmament, and that it will be fully verifiable.
Well, what would this Russian proposal achieve in terms of Washington's goals in Iraq? One of the goals is obviously regime change on the part of Saddam Hussein.
You are right, and this is a sticking point here. Why? Because as far as our sources informed us, it's exactly what Bush administration told Voloshin, answering to this Primakov's project proposal, is that, okay, they will fully disarm, but this is not exactly what we want. I mean, we want it, but we also want regime change and want some other things. For example, we want U.S. troops to be stationed in Iraq in order to then influence the political situation of the Middle East and to promote democracy, as President Bush is saying. Now, coming back to your answer, yes, it's falling short of what U.S. wants. That is why Russian President Putin, according to our newest information we got, is mulling over an addition or extension of Primakov's offer. There is an idea to send Primakov yet again to Iraq to talk with Saddam Hussein again and to try to convince him that there might be not bad idea for Saddam Hussein to really, in the face of immense pressure and to save his country and to save his regime, in fact, to step down, at least formally, and put in charge of Iraq one of his close associates who would be rather acceptable to the U.S. Tariq Aziz, one of the close associates of Saddam Hussein, yet he has never been implicated in any war crimes or crimes against humanity. It has been mulled over now, and probably by the time we're talking now, the U.S. has already been approached on this. He has been approached on regard in regard to this by the Russians.
And what has his response been?
That we don't know. But if the U.S. within a day or two says to Russia, we are not interested, then Primakov probably will not go. Mm-hmm. So now this is all in the making, and we think at this point that U.S. Administration, President Bush in particular, is so much bent on attacking Iraq, so he probably would reject this too.
Victor Gubarev, an associate with Stratfor Global Intelligence Service. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.